This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Really beautiful day in store for you. That sunshine sticking around all day long, but very cold. We'll be lucky to get up around the freezing mark. The same goes for tomorrow. China is setting a curfew on video games for kids. The new McDonald's CEO is going to have to be loading up on company stock soon. We'll get into that in our next segment. Right now, there's movement today in the trade spat between the U.S. and China. To talk about it and give us some insight, we're joined by Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, first off, for people who haven't heard, what exactly is going on here? What are the developments that we're hearing about?
Well, the first is the Chinese side has reported that there's an agreement to phase out the tariffs. And, of course, we've been hearing rumors earlier that China wanted tariffs removed as a quid pro quo for an agreement. And the fact that China is saying that there's an agreement and there's a step-down program makes it sound like, first of all, something very specific. Second of all, it's something that China wants. And third of all, it also looks like a little bit of a compromise because it's not a wipeout of the tariffs. It's an agreement to step them down and phase them out. So that makes the optimism about trade seem like it's a little bit more real because there's something substantive to sink your teeth in, not just, oh, things are going well, right?
Yeah, now the fact, though, I'm going to try not to be cynical here with everything that's gone on over the last many months. Until we actually see this happening, though, is there really cause for optimism?
Well, sure. But don't cash the check. I'm with you. When it's done, it's done. And we've seen them right on the brink of a deal, only to step way back. So until they sign on the dotted line, we always know there are things that can spoil these deals. And we know that China wants a deal, and China wants one really somewhat desperately because their economy really has slowed, and debt creation isn't creating the growth that it used to in China, and now they've built up a bit of a debt problem by trying to stimulate their economy. And they really want some stimulus. They want to take these restraints off of trade. And Trump doesn't want the economy in bad shape going into the election, so this would be a good time for him for removal of the tariffs. But he also has said that he wouldn't agree to a deal unless it was a real deal. So that sort of lays out the background, and I think there's ground for substantial optimism there.
Now, what do you expect? I guess it's tough to put a prediction hat on, but if we do get to a deal and those tariffs do start coming apart, do we expect a significant movement positively in our economy, or is this just not having that big of an impact?
I don't think so. I mean, it depends. They're going to have different impacts in different parts of the economy. For example, the farmers can breathe a big sigh of relief because China had redlined purchases of U.S. soybeans and other farm products. There also is this pending agreement that China had not been buying U.S. chickens, and they might decide that they'll take the restraints off of that. Of course, China right now has this problem with pork contamination, and so they have their own reasons to want to import more food, particularly chickens, especially if pork is a problem, and pork is a problem in China, and it's a big foodstuff there. So agriculture is one place where we're going to see a big impact. In other places, I think there'll be some positives, but the idea is that there's going to be a trade agreement. One of the things they're trying to do is to slow the Chinese penetration of our market and increase our penetration of China's market. And so I don't think that this is going to be like opening the floodgates. I think it will take away uncertainty. That will allow investment to progress, but it's not going to be a real noticeable jolt to the economy. I expect markets to react well to it, but I don't think you're going to see that much more in economic growth, but it will take away the downside. I mean, the potential is that growth could be a lot worse if this isn't taken off and if the trade war worsens. So the real good news will be is that we won't have a worsening and we're not going to have a trade war.
Thanks so much. Always good insight. Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics. Just ahead, why the new CEO of McDonald's is going to be buying a bunch of stock in the company. McDonald's new CEO did not own any shares of the company when he got the promotion. He'll have more than $7 million worth of them within the next year. Let's find out what's going on. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Chuck is joining us. He's based in Hammond, Indiana. So, Chuck, now, if I understand right, he has now purchased some shares, but he's got a lot more that he's going to have to purchase.
That's right. He has purchased, I think yesterday, about $500,000 worth. So he still has, you know, around $7 million worth of stock he'll need to own by next October, I believe. Now, you know, keep in mind, he does have a fair amount of options that he can exercise to acquire shares. But, you know, it costs money to exercise those options. And I think right now, if he exercised all his options, he would own about, I believe, about $7 million worth of stock, but I think the exercise of his options is going to cost him about $5 million. So long and the short of it is he's going to have to spend a few dollars over the next 12 months or so, or a little less than 12 months, in order to get up to that $7 million-plus ownership required by the company.
Yeah, and is that something McDonald's requires? Is that some sort of federal rules? I mean, why does he have to buy that much?
It sounds like it's a McDonald's rule. I'm not aware of any federal rules that require a CEO to own a certain amount of stock. I believe that's policy that McDonald's has placed on the CEO position.
Certainly the optics of your CEO not owning any shares, that would be that'd be slightly awkward, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I mean, you want the CEO, as well as a lot of upper management, to have skin in the game, and you know, from a shareholder perspective. So, yeah, it is a little awkward, and I think that's one of the reasons why companies like McDonald's do have policies that mandate a certain ownership requirement.
And the idea too is, as you mentioned, skin in the game. I mean, obviously, any CEO wants the company to win, but this gives them even that much more incentive.
They do, and you know, it's, you know, looking at what insiders do and corporate insiders such as CEOs and directors and how they behave in terms of stock, you know, can provide some clues for individual investors out there when they're following a stock, particularly if you're kind of looking for beaten down bargains. A lot of times the difference between a value stock and a value trap stock is you can feel a lot better buying a deep value stock if you're seeing upper management buying at that point. There are nice tells that you can see from an investor standpoint in terms of how insiders behave, whether they're buying or selling their company shares.
Yeah, Chuck, while we have you on the line, what do you make of the Dow theory these days? What's it telling us?
Well, the Dow theory, you know, if right now the Dow Jones Transportation Average was kind of the last shoe to drop, so to speak, from a Dow theory perspective, and you needed the Dow transports to close above basically 11,100. Right now, as you and I speak, they're right around 11,150. So, you know, if the transports stay where they are now on the close, or at least above 11,100, then the Dow theory is going to be in the bullish camp.
All right, Chuck Carlson, always good to have you with us. Chuck is CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Up next, some members of later generations would like to see baby boomers exit the workplace. They want jobs.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
What's described by some as a multi-generational traffic jam is happening in the American workplace. Let's talk about what's happening. Joseph McIntyre is joining us, District President for Robert Half Technology, based here in Chicago. Joe, it's good to have you on the show. What are we talking about here when we talk about a multi-generational traffic jam?
Hey, Cisco, thanks for having me on today. What we're talking about, we're in a unique situation in America today where we've never had this. We have five different generations in the workforce at one time. So from Gen Z, Y, X, baby boomers, some say the silent generation or traditionalists, we've never had that happen before.
And so what sorts of problems does that create, having all that diversity age-wise in the workplace?
I don't know if there's problems in having different diversities and age groups in the workplace. I think it could be a real benefit. I think that the unique situation that we have today, unemployment rates are at a 50-year low. And so you've got organizations that are struggling to find talent, to find knowledge, and that's creating kind of skills gaps. And so there might be some of the baby boomers, silent generation traditionalists staying in the workforce, whether it be because the organizations want them to stay in because they need the skill set that they can't find, and the traffic jam is you might have younger generations that maybe feel like they can't move forward or advance their career as a result of older generations staying in the workforce longer.
And as you mentioned, companies, it's sort of a difficult dance here because the younger worker might be cheaper, but that worker that's been around a while has experience and maybe even some expertise in their area.
They do. Yeah, they're the expertise is what the organizations don't want to see walk out the door through retirement because of unemployment rates and how difficult it is to find the talent that they need in their particular organization.
Now, it doesn't seem like this is going to end anytime soon, right? The challenges of this in the workplace?
Let's hope not. This is a great economy. I think we all can agree with that. I think that ultimately the question for younger generations is, do I stay? Do I wait and learn from the people that might be in the organization ahead of me and kind of gain that institutional knowledge? Is this maybe time for me to move on and go find the promotion or the raise or the next opportunity that I'm not able to get in my current company? And this is a good time to do that. With regards to the shortage in talent, quit rates, over 3.5 million people left their jobs voluntarily last month. And if you look at unemployment rates, if you can't find what you're looking for in your current position, you can certainly go try to identify that in another company because of the great economy we have today.
Yeah, lots of opportunities for sure. Thank you, Joseph McIntyre, District President at Robert Half Technology here in Chicago. Still ahead, Technology Thursday, an Asian nation takes action to try to control video game addiction.
This is Chicago's all news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Video game addiction is getting increased attention in the U.S. and globally. We'll learn about government intervention overseas in Technology Thursday. A new exchange-traded fund puts its focus on space-related activities. The search is on for a successor to Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. He's retiring at the end of the year. The UN General Assembly has voted for the 28th time to condemn the American economic embargo of Cuba. On Wall Street, the Dow up 237 points. The NASDAQ is up 55, and the S&P is up 15 points. Oil is up 2.25%. 28 degrees in Chicagoland right now, heading up to a high of 33. The sunshine is going to stick around throughout the day. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's look at these markets as they gain ground today. Chuck Lieberman is joining us, Chief Investment Officer at Advisors Capital Management, based in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Chuck, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, here's the short-run story and this longer-run story. The short-run story is obviously driven by the likelihood of a deal with China. Every time the news comes out on China, either the deal is getting closer, the market rallies. If it seems to be slightly further away, the market sells off. That's getting a good sense of looking at the trees. Stepping back and looking at the forest, the economy is doing well. Corporate profits are growing. The quarter's earnings came in better than expected. So the underlying trend is up. And if we only get away from the China story, that becomes clearer.
Talk about psychologically, maybe even more than fundamentally, psychologically, is it important for us to get even phase one of the trade deal just to see some kind of real movement?
Sure. There's no question that investors want to see a deal. They want this issue behind them. It's a huge distraction. It doesn't affect the underlying profitability, but it could. There's always the risk that there could be a real trade battle that is very disruptive to trade, very disruptive to production activity in the U.S. You do have to put it into perspective, however, because it's clear that exports to China are just a very small fraction of the U.S. economy. So even if damage occurs, it's going to be limited. But the much greater damage would occur because of psychology. Investors becoming fearful, businesses becoming fearful, and just spending less.
So is earnings season, you get a lot of not only what happened last quarter, but also projections for next quarter. In general, how are you feeling market-wide? You feeling like there are maybe some challenges ahead?
There are always challenges, some that we know about and many that we don't. Right now, I feel pretty comfortable about the market. Again, the economy's doing fine. I see nothing that will disrupt that. I do think we are going to get some sort of deal with China. It's going to be a long battle because I don't think the United States is going to get a lot of what we want. We really want something on intellectual property, and that's going to be a huge, huge event, and it's not going to happen so quickly. Maybe not with either President Xi or President Trump. So I think we'll be fighting with China for a long, long time. But in the meantime, the economy is doing fine, and that's really what counts.
So you don't sound like you're in a defensive mode. I mean, we've had some people here over the last several months kind of steering people in a more defensive strategy. You feeling kind of wholesale defensive or like people just need to be a little cautious?
Quite the contrary. I'm generally positive. I've been positive all along. I've been fully invested. I think it's risky to be out of the market. If there were visible problems that would concern me, then I'd be a lot more cautious. I just don't see it. It takes very little for people to get on radio or TV and say there's going to be a recession coming because that's very popular kind of stuff. It's the kind of thing that attracts eyeballs, and people want visibility, so they say that sort of stuff. But it's just not well grounded in the economy. We're near all-time lows on the unemployment rate. Corporate profitability is at all-time highs. Growth is continuing. You have to play for the longer term. You can't anticipate what the market is going to do day to day. So on a long-term basis, it looks good.
Yeah, if someone comes on the radio and says there's going to be a recession and there is a recession, then they look like a genius.
Yeah, and they've forecast recession 10 times for each one that occurs. There are people, you know, if you go to the bookstore, you'll find books written by different people about the pending recession every single year, nonstop.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, in general, keeping your money somewhere in the market is pretty good for the long run. I want to talk to you about a specific stock, or I guess it's a pair of stocks here. We touched on it yesterday. Xerox looking to take over HP. We have a few more details now on what Xerox may be offering.
Right. Well, that issue is one of two old-time companies, two long-time companies, combining and trying to figure out how to become more profitable. The big problem that both of them face is they're experiencing weakness in sales. People are printing less, hurts both of their businesses. There are large cost synergies that they can implement, save them a lot of money. So there's a lot of good economic logic behind the two of them combining. You have to look at them as slow growth companies.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the analysis. Chuck Lieberman, Chief Investment Officer at Advisors Capital Management. Up next, Technology Thursday, dealing with video game addiction. One country's taking some pretty extreme measures.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. The Chinese government has adopted an online video game curfew for minors in an attempt to fight addiction. Let's talk about the battle. Paul Hockman, president of Humongous Media, also former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, kind of interesting here. The Chinese looking to make it so that I guess kids can't play all night long.
That's right. In fact, what they're addressing is, first of all, they're addressing a huge market. Let's start with that. They're, you know, more than half of 626 million video game players in China. Revenue that's now about to surpass the U.S. Or just has surpassed, depending on who's measuring, and so forth. So it's a giant market. And the challenge they think they face, the government of China does, is that there is a real problem with addiction. And in China, when you're talking about lots of people, you're really talking about lots of people. So there are literally hundreds of millions of people who are affected by this.
And so they put in this curfew, basically trying to limit, I guess, how much you can play. You can still play a lot during the day, though, but I guess it just means that you're not going to be able to play until maybe 3 or 4 in the morning, something like that.
That's exactly right. And, you know, between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m., they're basically anybody under the age of 18 cannot play online games. Now, How they measure that, obviously there's a lot more oversight in China than there is here in the West as to who's online and so forth. So they can really track it. But this is serious business. An extreme example, a man in Shanghai was in an internet cafe and died after playing 19 straight hours of a video game called World of Warcraft. And now the AMA, the American Medical Association, is not yet ready to give it a diagnosable disorder, this addiction, but they're saying it's a real problem and it's true everywhere. So the fact is it's affecting huge numbers of people. China, obviously, with a very different style politically and otherwise, is addressing it in a very different way.
You touch on one of the challenges, and maybe it would be more so here in the U.S. because there's not the same sort of oversight as there is in China. But, I mean, what's to stop you from playing with your 18-year-old brother's login, you know, as long as you want?
Oh, there's nothing. In fact, you're absolutely right. First of all, anybody who has kids, I do, is aware that when that screen gets put in front of their face, something happens to their body, not just their face. They literally kind of relax into the couch, and it's sort of funny at first, but what you realize is you're seeing a physiological response to looking at a screen. In the case of video games, there are two kinds of disorders. One, because there are two kinds of video games. One is a standard game played by one player with a sort of goal or mission, and the other is online multiplayer games. And in both cases, what the AMA is looking closely at, and lots of other people, and clearly China's decided, is that this impacts, it creates addictive behavior in games and the players who play them. So it's a concern that they're all addressing.
Yeah, it puts parents in a position too, where you can't just tell your kids, all right, you got an hour of video games and then you go read a book, because they're just, compared to the video games, I mean, the book doesn't stand a chance.
No, it really doesn't. And by the way, what you're really dealing with is not just sort of misbehavior, you're dealing with addiction. So addressing addiction is, there are techniques for addressing it, and there are standards for addressing it and kind of language you're supposed to use. But a lot of parents just think, hey, the kid's overdoing it. But you're absolutely right. It's different than a book, and it is certainly hard to draw the child away from the screen and to the page.
And if you have the World Health Organization talking about it, I mean, it's tough to, I guess, classify this as some sort of a public health threat or something like that. But if you got a bunch of young people addicted to it, what's that going to mean later on in life?
Well, what you're really, first of all, the fact is that long term, it has a huge impact on people's brain development, especially kids. That's one of the reasons the Chinese and other people are looking at it. But it's also a giant market. So if you're talking about it, the U.S. market is second to China, $24.4 billion a year, according to PricewaterhouseCoopers. So guess what? There are a lot of people who are right now incentivized, that's giant companies, incentivized to keep people watching. So you have warring needs. One, you know, the corporate or financial need, and the other, you know, health. And I'm pretty sure I know who's going to win, but it is going to be a battle.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks so much. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, joining us on Technology Thursday. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come today, looking to space for investment profits.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The exchange-traded fund UFO launched in April. It invests in companies that are profiting from their work in space. Let's talk about it. Gary Kaltbaum is joining us, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, also a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Gary, when we talk about space, what exactly are we talking about? I mean, is this the potential for people to travel in space? I mean, what is this?
First off, quite the symbol, UFO, for this product. Look, whenever anything gets really loud and noisy in the markets, I will promise you Wall Street will come out with a product. So here you go. But this is not just about, you know, flying and stuff like that. This is has to do with satellite, GPS, and anything involved that moves around in space. So you have like a Sirius satellite on there where you get your radio from the satellite, Trimble Navigation, and Garmin's like GPS things, EchoStar telecommunication equipment. That's what this is about. And I gather if they start heading into space, they'll start throwing a few things in there. That just keep even Honeywell's in there too. So just keep in mind that the good news is there's not a lot of stocks in this product, so you can look at them on an individual basis and make sure they're doing well. And so far, so good in a pretty decent market.
But it's not the sort of thing where it's just kind of pie in the sky, Hail Mary, hey, you know, maybe this this new technology is going to work or something like that. I mean, you have some established companies here.
Oh, yeah, look, you got Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Comcast, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, Virgin Galactics in there, Airbus is in there. No, this is big time stuff. And it's just, you know, they're betting on the air, things flying through the air, satellites in the air, you name it. And again, it's back to they decided it's worth putting in a product, and I'm sure they'll get plenty of people investing in it.
Is this for the what sort of investors interested in this? Is it growth here that, you know, where they think that this is just going to continue growing?
Actually, it could be any type of investor. You can call it value, you can call it growth, you can call it whatever you want. To me, it's more of an area of the market type investing. And if you want to diversify into just another area, it's something that could be looked at. Just remember, there is a product now for everything that moves on Wall Street. There's the growth 50, the growth 100, the value, you know, that type of thing. So they just decided to come out with something else. And again, there's some pretty darn good companies in there. And I must tell you, I didn't know about this 2 days ago. I'm going to look at it myself.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for some of the celebrity managers to just come up with their own ETF. You know, just say, hey, here's my favorite stocks. You can invest in them.
I have news for you that you can invest in athletes right now and their performances and how much money they make. There are businesses that actually do that right now. Again, if it moves and makes money, you never know what product will come out. It's a matter of every person doing their due diligence and make sure they're not getting into crazy. Like when they came out with 100 different internet funds after the internet market went nuts already in 99, and then 90% of them had to shut down 6 months later. So, as always, do good due diligence and make sure you know what the heck you're getting into.
Yeah, certainly. Don't put your whole 401k into any of that. Thanks, Gary. Gary Kaltbaum, President Kaltbaum Capital Management. Again, he's online at GaryK.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.